Hello, I'm Attorney Michael Eline, and I am here today again to sort of finish up our last discussion on becoming a lawyer with no law school and the common law history of doing just that. And by the way, so what I'm doing here, just to explain, is on the website elinelaw.com, ELINELAW, law.com. I have a law study blog section. So if you go to the navigation menu in the drop down there, you can click on it. And what that'll do is allow you to look at the same material that I'm using to explain these videos. And I'm also including a screenshot. I'm doing this on the cheap. I don't have a lot of time. I'm busy. I'm a lawyer. But I get at least 20 calls a week from people trying to learn how to become a lawyer without law school. Is Kim Kardashian going to be able to do it, et cetera, et cetera. I want to make this quick because I don't like boring people. And I will allow you to do follow-up questions in the comments. I got up early this morning, so haven't taken a shower. I'm kind of a mess. Just work with me. At least you get to see the real me before I go and do my obligatory workout. Let's see here. So let's kind of get into it. So in this session, I'm going to finish up. So last time we discussed the common law history of becoming a lawyer without law school with respect to American common law and where it came from, and we discussed that there was a Knights Templar origin. Knights Templar actually started our first Inns of Court, which were basically lodges where law readers and pupils would be mentored by judges and other lawyers. We discussed that the original law was ecclesiastical law that came from the Catholic Church, and that the kings of the different countries would establish their own king's benches with their own law. But the common people never really had an advocate for themselves other than for religious disputes. So there wasn't a whole lot of justice for regular people, and that's where the term common law comes from. So ultimately, I'll just go down to the bottom here because I just want to close out with what I didn't touch on last time. And we also discussed the bar, where that comes from, the bar across the gate to the Knights Temple where they trained lawyers. And it comes from some other things that were integrated into it, such as a bar that you would have to pass in order to walk up to the more educated lawyers. And we also talked about the fact that the way that law was taught back then was more akin to a guild like the stonemasons, where you would have an apprentice and squire or whatever, and you would have a master or a knight, basically, and it just sort of went through there. So let's just go really quick to the bottom here. Okay, so ultimately, the Inns of Court and the reading for the law system became standardized, both in the United States and in England, starting first in England with the first law schools. Starting around 1729, because Martin Luther popularized the printing press, and so more information could get out there, training for lawyers became replaced with more reading materials, like Blackstone's commentaries on the English law and Sir Francis Bacon's writings. In fact, that's pretty much what Abraham Lincoln studied, and we'll get into that. So Sir William Blackstone was an interesting fellow. His position was that you shouldn't be a judge or even a politician if you know the law, unless you know the law and meant to keep it well. Interesting, because modernly, many people would argue that that's the exact opposite of what's happening with politicians and judges. We just heard allegations recently that the Sinaloa drug cartels have been funding elections in Arizona so they can keep that border open, and we just saw a really interesting movie called Sound of Freedom where they talk about human trafficking. So many people would argue that maybe we don't have people in positions of power who know the law and mean to keep it well, perhaps we would be obliged to look at Sir Francis Bacon and William Blackstone's writings. But in any event, the reading for the law method was really interesting because you would go before a panel, usually of three judges, and because they knew you, they knew you were of chaste character, you'd eaten with them, dined with them, argued cases with them, they came to moot courts with you to listen to you, you swept out their offices at night, lived, worked, trained with them, you would be sworn into the bar by having an oral exam, but where they would ask you questions and they would invite you to pass the bar, and that's how you would become a practicing lawyer in your jurisdiction. And that's the general rule, okay? That was with the Inns of Court. Now, ultimately, the inns were sort of replaced and became more like, almost like Masonic lodges, more like a social club, and that sort of was replaced by law schools. So let's just get into, today we're going to talk about famous lawyers who became lawyers with no law school. And then in our next episode, we're going to get into the common law history of law schools in America and in England. And then in another series, we're going to talk about the different states and jurisdictions that still allow you to become a lawyer without law school, since the governments sort of took over and propagandized law schools to a large degree. Good luck finding a non-groupthink law student these days, people. It's kind of scary. But let's go down and start our conversation. So we know that many of our founding fathers became lawyers with no law school. The most famous one, I think, would be Abraham Lincoln. A lot of us may not know this. But we're going to get into some other famous lawyers who became lawyers without law school. But we also need to understand that there are different degrees of lawyers without law school. There's lawyers without law school. There's lawyers who didn't have a law degree. There's lawyers who didn't have an undergrad. So in my article titled List of Famous Americans Who Became a Lawyer Without College or Law School, I actually break down each one by degree, by type of situation that they're in. So I break it down into four categories: lawyers with no parochial education, lawyers with some higher education, lawyers with an undergrad who read law and passed the bar, and lawyers who attended law school and also read law. In other words, they went to law school for a little bit of time. Maybe they read law first, and then there was a law school that finally came into existence because there weren't any, and then they went to those law schools. So I'm going to start out with a list of famous Americans who passed the bar with no basic education or no law school. So, and I wanted you to know that many of them, our first Supreme Court justice and many state justices have done it. So when you talk to a modern academic today, they'll be like, oh, you don't have a degree, you're not qualified to talk about this. You know, you didn't go to a regular law school, you're not qualified, you don't know what you're doing. So I just want you to see that that's not how it always was, and people weren't always so quick to think that someone who's never practiced law but got a teaching credential would be better at practicing law than someone who actually tried cases, did depositions, moot courts, and studied under judges and lawyers. So you have to make that decision. You believe in academic intelligence over common sense and real-world experience, I'll never be able to convince you. I think both systems are good. I think that law schools fail their students by not forcing them to do internships. In any event, I'm getting off the beaten path. Excuse me. So yes, you can be a judge without a law degree in some states. That's true. You don't need a law degree to be the president. And then here are some famous Americans who became judges, lawyers, and presidents, sometimes with no basic education. So there was Patrick Henry, John Rutledge, John Marshall, and Abraham Lincoln. I'm just going to focus on these guys, but just real quick, I want to take a scroll down here because I want you to see how many people there were who, in some way, and I've put in here in brackets, no undergrad, no law school, Stephen Douglas, Clarence Darrow, no undergrad, no law school, see that? Joseph Story. You may not know who these people are because, unfortunately, our academic system, in my opinion, has failed us. They teach us to hate our country instead of teaching us to celebrate it and its rich history and its evolution to become a fairer and better place. But I want you to take a look, and so you'll understand. And a lot of people, a lot of people. Oh, look, Francis Scott Key. I'll bet you don't know who he is unless you're a boomer or a Gen Xer, because I doubt they teach that in schools anymore. All famous peoples. And then I go on to lawyers with an undergrad who read law and passed the bar. John Jay. Who is he? Oh, our first Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. Never attended law school. He did have an undergrad. And I'll get into all this once we... all the way down. So, I don't know, there's at least 100 guys here. I mean, these things took me months to put all this stuff together. There's nobody who has a more comprehensive view or reading of any of this stuff. So let's just go back up to the top, and we're just going to talk about these guys really quick. So let's start with Patrick Henry. So Patrick Henry was born in Hanover County, and he read for the law. He was basically self-taught, and then he got sworn into the bar after an oral examination by a board of examiners. And he, the highest status he achieved in our country was the founding father of Virginia, which is pretty cool. And his famous quote was, "Give me liberty or give me death." And I can relate to that because you can see this is my philosophy, the Spartan philosophy of the Marine Corps. Rah! So, let's get into the next one. John Rutledge. Now, John Rutledge is really interesting. No parochial, no law school, and he was the second Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court. He actually studied at the Middle Temple as a 15-year-old. That's another thing also. The kids were much younger when it was almost more like how Asian families are, where they were teaching their kids at a super young age. They kept a strong two-parent family in place with a very strong disciplinarian as a father. I believe the average person who was one of our delegates to the Constitutional Convention spoke at least 7 different languages. Now, people don't even speak English very well. So, you can imagine, a lot of this had to do with just discipline. And Jocko Willink will tell you, and this is my philosophy, discipline is freedom. If you know, let a bunch of undisciplined school teachers teach your kids, they'll be undisciplined kids, and they'll follow the philosophies of those so-called academics. So I wanted you to sort of get a look at what's going on here with this founding father. Now, John Rutledge is an interesting fellow because he actually studied at the Middle Temple as a 15-year-old. He was admitted into the Middle Temple. And I actually have a copy of the Middle Temple records right here showing it there. And that's on the website if you're a historian and you want to know more about it. Ultimately, he got his law license in 1760. He was called to the English bar. They say, calling you to the bar, right? And then he sailed back to Charleston upon swearing his oath. He practiced law in South Carolina. He was an elder brother of founding father Edward Rutledge, and he chaired the committee to draft the Constitution in 1787. Ultimately, he became an associate justice of the Supreme Court and the second chief justice of our country, and he became, again, the first governor of South Carolina after he signed the Declaration of Independence. And his famous quote is, "So long as we may have an independent judiciary, the great interests of the people will be safe." And this is one of the reasons why the federal bench gives lifetime appointments to federal judges, because they figured, like how California is, where if you have politically appointed judges, it's highly likely they're going to go along with the political program. So, for example, gender-affirming care. it's highly unlikely that a California judge is going to rule in front of the parent who doesn't want to affirm, so-called affirm the kid's gender because they might not get reappointed to the bench. So many people believe that that makes it a less independent judiciary because many people argue that California judges are political animals. And so that would be the reason, one of the reasonings behind, not just an explanation, it's not my opinion, but this is just what other people have to say. I mean, I don't have the answers for that one. So let's get into the next one. John Marshall. Now, John Marshall had no education at all, nothing. And he was born in Germantown, Virginia. He was on leave from the army when he went to some lectures and from William and Mary's College while he was reading for the law. Ultimately, he got a law license and he was admitted to the bar, but he's another law reader. He fought under George Washington during the Revolution and he became an Associate Justice of the Supreme Court. His famous quote is, "An unlimited power to tax involves necessarily the power to destroy." It's interesting how all of these guys who became lawyers without law school, seem to support positions that a modern-day libertarian or someone who hasn't spent all their life in a government-run, backed, funded law school or college would, modernly. It seems like they don't toe the party line. It seems like they always move towards more freedom and less government. Just an interesting observation. Now, the next one that I have that's super famous is Abraham Lincoln. So Abraham Lincoln's a really interesting character. He was dirt poor. He had zero education, and I believe he wrote like with a piece of coal or something on the back of his shovel. I think a couple times a year people would come to his village or town when he was a kid. He was born in actually Hodgenville, Kentucky, so everybody thinks he's from Illinois. It's not true. His John Stewart, a Springfield attorney, encouraged him to study law and loaned him some law books. He never went to law school, and he never read law under a judge or a lawyer. He didn't do any of that. So, no, I'm not like Abraham Lincoln. I actually studied under judges and lawyers. Excuse me. So he read the law by himself. He became a lawyer, and he was required to obtain a certificate in order to be of good moral character from a judge and a stamp. And once he got that, he was able to use that to travel and get passed into the bar. And then he traveled back west in order to practice law. He became what's called a prairie lawyer, and he ultimately became the president of the United States. One of the things that he has over me, and it's in his famous quote, is tact, the ability to describe others as they see themselves. So I'm not too good at that. But he was famous for freeing the slaves, suspending the right of habeas corpus, which clearly was a violation of the Constitution, and the U.S. Supreme Court found that suspending the habeas corpus was a violation of the U.S. Constitution. And he instituted martial law in violation of the U.S. Constitution, and he also installed unelected southern state judges and state representatives to pass laws in order to restrict those states' rights who were in the Confederate states. Stage actor John Wilkes Booth assassinated him, but it says her, so I need to fix that, obviously. So that's pretty much that as far as a list of famous lawyers who became lawyers without law school, with a little bit of narrative about how things have changed, and also a word of encouragement to all of those of you who are on a law reader type program or are in states where you can't get on one. You know, California, believe it or not, has the best law study program there is. And of course, that was instituted under a previous administration in government years ago. Basically, they just carried on the common law tradition. So, you know, good on them for not eliminating the program, because free thinkers like me wouldn't have been able to become lawyers, you know, because I was a business owner, owned several businesses, and basically a self-educated guy. I'm a disabled Marine. So it gave me a chance to work full-time, be able to support myself, and volunteer my time as an apprentice without charging anybody. So all I can say to all of you guys is, we don't promise you a rose garden in the Marine Corps or in life. And if you want to become a lawyer, it's going to be based on merit and hard work. It doesn't have anything to do, so stop trying to pretend like you're a victim. Stop trying to tell other people that they're your oppressor, and get out there and make it happen for yourself. Nobody is standing there to give you any special favors in life, and the only way you can get what you want is to go out there and make it happen. You can ally yourselves with other people who think like you, who won't judge you based upon some esoteric situation, and will judge you based on your character and your character alone. And that's it. I hope you guys all have a great day. Semper Fidelis.